All right, guys, thanks for coming. Tonight's topic is dealing with a rebellious teen. This is part five of our community parenting seminars, and I think all the previous ones are online if you want to catch up on any of those. You guys have all been here before, so I won't go into long introductions, but my name's Steve Nelson. I have eight kids, four boys, four girls. I've done a little bit of teaching. As far as teenagers go, we have three teens, so I have a little experience with that. They aren't particularly rebellious, which is good. We did have a rebellious teen stay with us once for about a month, and so that was quite an experience, and I got to learn how to work with rebellious teens a little bit then. And then also, just as a pastor, I've been able to counsel some people that were dealing with some pretty tough situations at times. So I guess to start off, just thinking about what am I talking about? What do rebellious teens do? So some of the kids that I've worked with, the kids have struggled with drugs. Typically starts off with pot and then sometimes into more serious stuff. Kids just yelling and screaming at their parents, knocking over furniture. There's a girl in our church that kicked out the windshield of her parents' car. Cutting, depression, suicidal, things like that. There was a guy that was working at our house the other day trying to fix our plumbing. And he said that his 13-year-old had stole his car. And he's like, oh, I never should have taught him how to drive. And this kid stole his car. And so he was trying to figure out, you know, what do I do? Because that's kind of hard to know with your own kid. So do I turn my own kid into the cops and then my kid has a record? Or do I let it go? Or how does that work? And so he got his car back like 3 days later. So that can be challenging. Just for kicks, I went on to, what's it called, Yahoo Answers or something like that. But somebody had posted the question, what rebellious things did you do as a teenager? And so there were only like maybe eight or nine answers on it, but some of the stuff that was written down was stabbed tires, tattooed self, stole parents' car, drinking, pot, dating older guys, skipping classes, graffiti, got prego. That's kind of an interesting way to put it. And I thought this one was kind of interesting. This was a little bit of a longer one. And she said, got my belly button pierced, dyed my hair weird colors, skipped school, smoked, drank, became a pothead, lied, stole, had sex, ran off for hours or days at a time, managed to get arrested, usual stuff bored kids do, LOL. And just, I don't know, just the flavor of it is kind of like, well, that's what I did, that's what my friends did, that's just the way it is with teenagers. And I think just to understand that, you know, it doesn't have to be that way, that we can have a lot of influence as parents on our kids and help them not do those things, help them go down a better path. And just the lightheartedness of it, the, you know, the LOL at the end, kind of, well, that's what bored kids do. As parents, we have to have a different expectation that we can really help our kids go down a different path. So one question parents have when they have teens who are having a hard time is they just wonder, you know, is it too late? Is there any hope for this kid? When you have a 16-year-old and you're, you know, just going through a nightmare with him, and you realize, well, I have 2 years left and this kid's out of here, and then they're on their own and they're making their own choices. So, you know, is there really any hope? And so I think that's an important question to think through. And first of all, I think just to understand, I guess a couple things. One is a rebellious teen is not that much different than a two-year-old. I mean, they're extremely similar. And the teen that stayed with us for a month a number of years ago, you know, some of the stuff that we were telling her, you know, just, hey, when I talk to you, look in my eyes. Or, hey, you know, when you fold clothes, don't do a crummy job like that. You know, do it serious, like you're doing it for yourself. And we're just giving her input that you would give a two-year-old or a five-year-old and just expecting her to behave differently. And so, in some ways, working with a teenager, just as far as what you do and how you think about it, isn't really all that different. So you guys have young kids. The things that you're thinking through now are really pretty much the same type of things that you deal with a teenager. And then I think the other thing to think about is just with a rebellious teen, is it too late? Well, no, but yeah, it's not too late, but it would be a lot easier to deal with it at this age. And, you know, Kathleen saw this picture. She didn't know what I was doing. It's like, well, that kid's too cute. She's not old enough. I'm like, yeah, but you know, you could work with this kid. It'd be a lot easier to help her not be rebellious than a kid that is physically bigger than you, or a kid who can drive, a kid who can run away, a kid who can knock over furniture in your house, a kid who can kick out your car windshield, things like that. It's a lot easier to deal with it at the younger ages. So obviously, where you're at now is a great spot, because it'd be better to be preventative than to be reactive when they act that way. I think just to understand that the idea of boot camp, that when an 18-year-old goes off to boot camp, you expect that kid to change, and the military expects to change that kid. Now, some people go into the military, and it's, you know, they're kind of career people, and they really have a heart for it, and they love to do it. And then there's a lot of people that go in, and they're just kind of drifting through life, and they're not disciplined, and they need that discipline, and they go into the military for the discipline, and the military's like, great, we'll do that. We'll teach you that discipline. And so for the military, they don't think, it's too late, you know, you're 18, you're fully grown, what are we going to do with you? No, they figure out, you know what, we can teach these guys some stuff. We can give them some structure, we can put them in boot camp, we can train them, we can help them become different people. And even when you think about kids that have been really rebellious, that sometimes they get sent to like a troubled teen home. And basically what they do at the troubled teen home is they have a whole lot of structure and a whole lot of supervision, and they really keep a close eye on them, and they are there all the time, and they're giving them input. And in a way, it's very similar to boot camp. And so my thought would be, is like, okay, if the military can do that, or if the troubled teen home can do that, then why can't you do that in your own home? Also, just working with people as a pastor, you know, people come into my church and they have problems that they're dealing with. And so somebody doesn't walk in and you're like, so how old are you? You're 30 years old? Sorry, it's too late for you. You know, there's no hope for you to change. Or when we've had college ministries in our church and stuff, when college students are coming in, you don't, you know, as they come in, you don't like, okay, are you too messed up? Oh, sorry, you're 18 and you're too messed up. I can't do anything with you. You know, you expect change and you want change and you help people change and you give your life to helping people do that. And so if you can have those kind of expectations on an 18-year-old, then why can't you have them on a 17-year-old or a 16-year-old or a 15-year-old? And so is it too late? No. Obviously, as they get older, things become more complicated, but it's not too late just because your kid's a teenager. The thing that I think could be really challenging is not can your teenager change. The really challenging thing is, can you change? And probably in a typical home where there's a really troubled teenager, that child is somewhat of a product of that home, somewhat of a product of that upbringing. Perhaps the dad has been uninvolved, or maybe the parents have been too permissive or things like that. And so that's the environment of the home. So can you take this kid who's gone down this bad path in this home and leave them in that same home, in that same environment, and expect a significant amount of change in their life? Probably not. So if you have this troubled teen that's going through a really hard time, their environment has to change radically. And so in the home, as a parent, you've got to be the one to change. So instead of asking the question, well, is there any hope for my kid? You know, is it too late for them? It'd be better to turn that on yourself and be like, can I change enough to really make a difference here? And I'm not saying that all troubled teens are a direct result of their parents' weaknesses and stuff, but certainly that plays into what a lot of teens go through. So we're going to look at just two different philosophies on what you can do with a troubled teenager. And before we do that, I just want to think through this question. As a teacher at the beginning of the school year, I had to sort through this as a new teacher. Where should you have the class troublemaker sit? So I think I only taught like 5 classes or something, and probably 4 of them had a troublemaker. And one of those 4 probably had 4 troublemakers. And it's real challenging. And there are different philosophies on this. So one philosophy would be you have the troublemakers sit right at the front of the class. Because then as a teacher, you're right there, and if they start acting up, then you're on top of it and you can get them to calm down. And the other philosophy is, well, if they do act up, then they disturb the whole class. And so instead of putting them up front, what you do is you put them in the very back. And then they're acting up, but at least they're not disrupting everybody. Maybe they're just only disrupting a smaller section. And so as a teacher, I had to kind of weigh through that. You know, what? How much influence can I have on that kid sitting in the front of the class? And, you know, they teach you all this stuff in class. You know, like, well, if the kid's talking, you just kind of walk over and stand next to them. And if that doesn't work, maybe you just kind of put your hand on the desk, and maybe you redirect him and say, hey, you know, can you pay attention and have focus? Or maybe if you really want to push the limits, you can go over and just kind of put your hand on their shoulder. Hey, dude, you know, you need to get to work here. And so it didn't take me very long to realize that that didn't work at all. And so for me, it's like I have no control over these troublemakers. So I stuck them all in the back of the class because I didn't have the skill set as a new teacher to have an impact there. I tried to do the things they taught me, and I couldn't see it working at all. And so for me, I just thought, you know what, I don't have time to deal with this. And so I'm going to stick the troublemakers in the back of the class. And you had to weigh through your interactions with different kids and how you felt like you could influence them. I remember the first day of school, or I guess it was probably the second day, the first day she had turned in a paper. And I got the paper, and I'm trying to read her name. It's like, I have no idea what this says. And she had found some funky way to write her name where she was writing letters on top of each other and stuff. And so I handed back all the papers, and whose is this? And, you know, somebody, oh, that's mine. I'm like, okay, I don't want any more papers the rest of the year with your name like that. I want to be able to read it. And so she threw this big tantrum, you know, for about 10 minutes of, you know, well, that's the way I always write my name, and that's stupid, and who are you to control how I write my name, and on and on and on and on and on. And I'm basically, you know, kind of the real fatherly type, and you know, no, I'm the teacher, and you're the student, and you're going to do things my way. And that became a real issue, because what I found was, with that girl, she didn't respond to that kind of strong fatherly type of leadership and being told what to do. Now, in my parenting style, that's the way that I am. And I'll be real strong with my kids sometimes. But in the school, it would have taken all my time to interact with her in that way. And so what I had to do is I had to choose which path I wanted to go down. And I had to choose and say, I'm just not going to disturb her. I'm just going to kind of walk on eggshells around her and try to not get her upset. And things went a lot better. Until the end of the year when she threw something at me and cussed and I had to file a police report on her. But, you know, as a parent, you have to kind of make a decision, too, of which path do I want to go down with my kids? And there are two basic strategies that people would use. I'll give you the name for the strategy in a minute. But basically, the first one is that you're gonna kind of walk in eggshells with your kid, and you're going to protect that relationship. And in a sense, you're kind of giving up, and you're saying, you know, they're in the terrible teens, and I don't want to ruin the relationship here by being the tough guy, and so I'm going to kind of let things go and see where they end up, and hopefully in a few years, they'll come back with minimal damage. And I don't really prefer this method, but I just want you to be able to think through these two methods. So in this method, basically your goal is to protect the relationship. Now, this isn't a protective relationship like, oh, sweetie, how are you? You know, this is a troubled teen, so this isn't like there's a great relationship there anyway. But you're just thinking, okay, I want there to be a future relationship. I'm hoping that this kid will start liking me again someday. And then you redirect him gently. So for me, I don't have any problem being really strong with my kids. So if my kid was supposed to be in at 10 o'clock and they came in at 10:05, I would be really upset. And I'd be like, hey, buddy, what's the deal? You know, you're supposed to be in at 10. And, oh, well, we lost track of time. And I'd be like, don't give me that. You know, you came in at 10:05. When I say 10, I mean 10. I don't mean 10:30. I don't mean 10:05. I don't mean 10:01. I don't mean 10 in 1 second. Before 10 means before 10. And I can be real strong with them like that. And that's okay, because I have a real loving relationship with them too, and that allows me to speak real strong words into their lives. With this strategy, you wouldn't do that. You would redirect them real gently and be like, hey, sweetie, you know, it'd probably be best for us all. You know, we agreed on 10 o'clock, and it's 10:05. And they'd be, shut up! Like, you know, it's probably best if you don't say shut up. You know, I want to have a good relationship with you. And you're walking on eggshells a little bit. So you're maybe trying to redirect them, but real gently. And you're trying to protect that relationship. You're avoiding major confrontation. So you're trying to keep peace in the home. This is a troubled teen, there is not peace in the home. But you're trying to keep from, you know, there being major explosions in the home. And so you don't push it like I might have with my kid with, hey, you don't come in at 10 in 1 second. You know, you don't confront them to that degree, because then they'll explode and then they'll lock the door and then they'll throw things around the house and stuff like that. And then basically, you yield to their choices. So ultimately, if they choose to stay out late, so be it. If they choose not to come home, so be it. You know, and again, you gently try to redirect them and stuff. And so the acronym here is PRAY. And basically, that's your goal with this method, is you're just praying, you know, oh, I hope that they don't commit suicide during these years. I hope that they don't get pregnant. I hope that they don't get involved in drugs. I hope that they don't run away. I hope that something really major doesn't happen. And you're just kind of leaving it to God, you know. Hopefully not too much damage will be done before they come back. Okay, so this is one method. So we'll call this the PRAY method. Kathleen didn't like this because this is the method that we wouldn't prefer. She's like, well, you can't name the bad one PRAY. But it's reflective of the mindset. It's just like, well, let's just pray this all works out. So the other method is going to be a stricter method. And I'm going to go through this real quickly right now, and then we're going to go through this in detail. But basically, in this method, you would restrict. You would have lots of rules and boundaries. And you would have the, you know, 10 o'clock means 10 o'clock. And we'll go through a ton of examples on that. I think it's important that we understand that with our kids, even when we're holding a tough line, we need to be very loving. And it's that love relationship that allows us to be strong with them without hurting them, without offending them, without pushing them away. And so we've got to have a relationship where we're encouraging them and coaching them. We need to supervise them. We're watching everything they do. We're not just kind of letting them off, you know, like, well, have fun at the party. Well, you know, have a good time at the movies. You're staying on top of everything they're doing, and you're watching it and making sure that they're doing what they're saying they're doing, that they're where they're supposed to be, that they're being honest, that they're living a good life. We correct them. So we have all these restrictions, all these guidelines, all these rules. And if they get away from these rules, then we do whatever we can to bring them back. And so this kid, can't really see him, but he has a sign that says, I had money, but I stole headphones from Kohl's because I wanted to be a follower. Okay, so obviously that's something his parents made him do, or the school or the judge or somebody. You don't have to agree with that. I don't know if that's a good idea or a bad idea, but they didn't just let it go. They didn't say, oh, it's okay, I understood. You know, sometimes you want to look cool in front of your friends, so you stole some, but that's probably not the best. You know, it's not this cushy thing. Somebody came up with something for them to do to try to correct, to try to make up for what they had done wrong. You unyieldingly hold to this plan. I wanted a U word, so I had to use unyieldingly, which I'm not sure is a word. But basically, I guess in more proper English would just be don't yield. So you stick to this plan, and I think this is probably the major fault with people that try to do this plan. They stick to this plan but for a very short time, and then they give up. And then lastly would be to evaluate extremes. And we'll look at some examples of this in a minute, but one example would be moving away. And there's a author I heard about one time that had said that when he was going through his troubled teen years and he had some negative influences around him, his dad just said, "We're moving." And just moved away from those influences. That's a real dramatic thing. And it would take a lot of courage to do that as a parent. And you really have to love your kid and really care about their future to go to such an extreme. But you need to be willing to do that. Then obviously our acronym here is RESCUE. So our two different strategies. One is to just kind of pray, hope that everything turns out okay. And the other is to rescue them. So one mindset is, hey, they're going to go down this path no matter what I do. And so I'm just going to hope that everything goes okay, try to protect the relationship. And the other is, they're going down this terrible path. I need to be in there. I'm going to change this path. I'm going to do everything that I can to rescue them, to get them back onto a good path. So how do you know which method's better? And just for the record, we're not really going to cover the pray method very much. If you want to think about that some more, you can just go onto the web and type in help for troubled teens, and any advice you get will be kind of that pray method. Basically, hey, don't push them, you know, give them some space, they have a lot of hormones, and that type of thing. So I'm going to focus on that second method. But is that really the best method? And I want you to think through this a little bit, because your bent and your personality is going to play into it a lot. And so you want to think through as we go over this stuff, what's my bent? And then, can I change that to make the rescue method work? So, I want to just go through some questions. If your worst fear in the world is that your kid is going to hate you, which method would you use? The pray method. If your worst fear in the world is that your kid is going to ruin their life, which method would you use? Rescue. Okay, so if you're going through your parenting and you're like, oh, I really want my kids to love me, and, you know, I really want everybody to be together at Christmas, and I really want our family to stay together, and this is really important to me, which it is to everybody, but if that's super important to you, and you hit those teen years and your kids are acting up, you're going to be like, oh, I don't want to be the tough guy. I don't want to be real strong, because you'll be afraid that you're going to damage the relationship. On the other hand, if you lean more the other way, it's like, man, my kid could really mess up their life here. I mean, they could really destroy it. And so, you know what? I'm willing to risk everything. I'm willing to risk my relationship with them if it comes down to that, because I want to do everything that I can to rescue them. And so those are conflicting mindsets. And so you have to think through, okay, where am I at in that balance, and where do I need to be? What would need to change for me to be able to use one or the other? Are you a strict parent or are you a lenient parent? Could go either way. If you have a troubled teen, that could be, I would think that tends to be that it's with lenient parents. But it could also be, particularly if you have a dad that's real strict and without much relationship. But if you're going to go down the rescue method, then you've got to be able to be tough. Because the lenient parent in the rescue method is just not going to be tough enough. And that's going to cause a lot of problems. And in that picture, I kind of like that picture, because just the mom looks just, she's having a tough time there, you know. And you just look at the picture, it's like, well, who's in charge here? Who's the boss? You know, like, well, it's the kid. And mom just looks battered. Well, I don't know that she's going to be tough enough to do the rescue. I don't know if she's going to be able to tell that kid, to put that kid in his place, and to let him know how he needs to live and how he needs to act. Do you want immediate peace in the home or long-term peace in the home? So, if you do the rescue method, what's going to happen is there is going to be a ton of conflict. So just like with me and that girl at school, I realized right away, it's like, if I was, I would just say, if there's going to be a ton of conflict, then so be it. And that's the way it'll be. And we'll have a ton of conflict until your behavior changes. But at school, it's like, I don't have time to engage with you. I have a class of 25 people, and you're one of 25, and I cannot spend that kind of time with this person. And so I wanted immediate peace. And so I went I went with kind of the more of the pray method with her. It's like, well, let's hope things work out for her, but I'm going to walk on eggshells around her. And that's the way it is in the home, too. That if you want immediate peace, then you back off. Now, again, remember, this is a troubled teen. So immediate peace is not you're sitting around at the family dinner table and chatting about how the day went. Immediate peace means you're just not fighting and calling the cops and throwing things and stuff like that. Not that you would be throwing things, but that they might be throwing things. So long-term wise, if you want genuine change in their life, I think the rescue method might create more genuine change, and then there might be more peace in the long run. And so that would be my preference there. Can you stand to go head-to-head versus can you stand to do nothing? Some parents don't want to go head-to-head with their kid, and they don't like that flavor in a home. For me, it would drive me crazy to stand by and do nothing. And just, you know, to watch my kid drifting away and just hope, you know, well, I hope that they're, you know, I hope they're not out sleeping with somebody. I hope that they're not doing drugs. I hope that they don't run away. Now, if they go down a path that I have no control of, well, then certainly I need to pray. Certainly then I need to do all that I can to help bring them back at some point. But as long as I have an opportunity to build into their life, I want to be there. And I want to be the one building into them, even if I'm going head-to-head. Another real important thing is to be, are you united as a couple? And so what can happen is when you have a troubled teen, you know, in most families, you probably have one parent that's more permissive and one that's more lenient. And you know, you have just different personalities. But you've got to be united as a couple, because when you have a troubled teen, it's a nightmare. It is really a nightmare. Now, I think on most of the troubled teens I've dealt with, if not all, it's got to the point where they're calling the cops. The kid's calling the cop on the parents, or the parents are calling the cops on the kid. And it's just, I mean, that is just an extreme level of conflict in the home. And so you have an intense amount of pressure. As a couple, you really have to be united in how you're going to deal with that. Are you fearful that your kids are going to be on their own in a few years anyway? Or do you believe that in a few years you can make a huge difference? So this kind of goes back to the boot camp mentality. So do you have kind of a defeated attitude? And it's like, you know, well, they're 16, and in 2 years they're going to be out of the home, and, well, I don't want to push them away anymore, and they're going to be making their own decisions, so I don't know that I can really do anything here, and so I just want to kind of keep the peace for the next couple years. Is that your mindset, or is it, man, I got 2 years left. I can make a huge difference in 2 years. How long is boot camp anyway? 6 weeks? 4 months? Okay. So in 4 months, you can make a huge difference. Now, it's not like everybody comes out of boot camp and they're a saint, but it makes a difference. And so, what's your mentality? Is it that, well, I really can't do much in a couple years? Or is it, man, 2 years, that's a huge amount of time. I can really build into that kid. And so all those things are going to impact what you're able to, or which method you might use, if you want to use the pray method or the rescue method. Again, obviously I prefer the rescue method, but that fits my personality, that fits my wife's personality. Not everybody is bent that way. I think it would be ideal if you could change and bring about that change in your home rather than send your kid off to a troubled teen home or do something like that. So I want to talk through the rescue method and what that would look like just specifically. Basically, your goal with the rescue method is to create a disciplined, structured, and visible environment. So disciplined and structured. Visible means you're watching everything that's going on. So if I had a troubled teen, I would want to create a new world for them. Things are going to be different in our home. It's going to be a lot like boot camp, but it's a boot camp with a very specific, noble purpose. You're not just adding a bunch of rules and restrictions to be mean and, okay, well, now I'm going to be a mean parent. No. You are in a desperate situation, and your life is going to be ruined. And if I don't step in here and do something, then I'm afraid you're going to go down the wrong path. So I am willing to do everything it takes to put you on the right path. And so that's the mindset, and that's why you would have these restrictions. For me, I would be willing to take away any and every privilege that a kid has. Basically, no holds barred. Because a troubled teen is in a terrible situation, and I would want to do everything I could. So, as I go through some of these specifics, I'm going to sound really mean. And so, I guess two things with that. One is, remember, this is a troubled teen. It's not just a normal kid. And so, it calls for real extreme measures. But that said, even though I'm going to share it kind of real extremely, I want you to think through each of these areas with a normal teen and a normal kid. So I'm going to talk about restrictions that are extreme, but probably every area that I talk about should already have some restrictions. And so it's not that, well, just because they're a troubled teen, well, now I'm going to be concerned about their friends. No, you'd be concerned about their friends with all kids. And so... Some of these things are going to be extreme, but even though it's extreme with a troubled teen, these things should be in place with all kids. So we're going to go through a ton of these. First of all, we want to restrict their after-school activities. Well, for a couple of reasons. One is just after-school activities like choir and sports, different clubs. Those are all privileges. And so if a kid is acting up, you take away their privileges. But also, though, that's all time away from you, time when you can't supervise them, time when they're with friends. And so I would want to restrict those things. Probably if I had a troubled teen at the level that we've been talking about, there would be no after-school activity. I wouldn't care if they're the, you know, all-state champion wrestler or whatever. Tough cookies, you know. You're in home. As soon as school's done, you're at home. In fact, I might even say, and I'm going to pick you up at school. Because I probably wouldn't even want them the extra 30 minutes on the bus. I want them at home. I want them with me. Overnighters, obviously I wouldn't let my kid go on overnighters. Again, it's just more unsupervised time. It's time away from me. That would be totally out of the question. Phone, I guess first of all, just with a regular kid, I'd be real restrictive on a phone. Why do they need a phone? Do they really need to say, okay, I'm going to bed now, and I'm going to the bathroom, and I'm going to watch a TV show? And why? You know, what's the purpose? Certainly, though, with a troubled teen, I would take away their phone, and I would restrict even their home phone use. Computer use, especially like social websites where they're connecting with friends and stuff, I would restrict that. I'll talk about that a little bit more later on. Friends. This can seem kind of mean, and I know that people are uncomfortable with that idea of choosing your kids' friends, but hopefully you do that all the time anyway. You know, if your kid makes friends with some little kid that is obviously a sociopath or something, you know, you're like, oh, okay, buddy, I'm not sure we want to hang out with him quite so much. You know, and so we already restrict our kids' friends somewhat. But if it gets to the point that you have friends of your kid who are just terribly bad influences, or not even necessarily that they're worse than your kids, but they're just a bad combination when they get together, they act up, cut it off. It's not that big of a deal. And big picture, you know, my high school friends, it's like, well, I see one of them about once every 4 years. And now that Facebook's there, I guess I connect with a couple of them. But, you know, big picture-wise, it's not that big of a deal. If they're super negative friends, even if they are a lifelong friend, you probably don't want them as a lifelong friend. So be careful. Anything with a lack of supervision. that doesn't just mean that there is supervision, but there has to be really good supervision. And so anything that, like, involves, like, going out shopping or hanging out with their friends or going to a concert, no. Just, you know, if your kid comes up and they're a troubled teen, like, oh, can I please go to that concert? It's my favorite group. And oh, they never go on tour and they're finally here. This is a chance in a lifetime. And I got backstage passes and yada, yada, yada. No. This is a troubled teen. Now, this is a kid that needs a lot of restrictions. That is certainly not the environment they need to be in, especially not without you. I guess if you want to go backstage with them, that might be a different story. But it's a drastic situation, and you need to take drastic measures. Sleeping hours. So you're trying to add more structure to this kid's life, and so you don't just let them do what they want. They can't stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning and get up at noon. You know, give them reasonable hours. Say, hey, by 10 o'clock you need to be in bed, by 8 o'clock you need to be awake, or whatever you want to set. And you just put them in that mold, put them in with those standards, and that will help them gain discipline to their life. Any external influencers, and mostly what I mean by that is media. And some of you may have seen something I sent out on Facebook this week, but I just read a report by the Kaiser Family Foundation, and teens spend about 8 hours a day with media exposure. So that's magazines, TV, books, computer, video games. And that's just straight hours. And then some of the stuff they do, like, double. So, like, they'll be listening to music while they're reading a magazine. And if you count the double stuff, then it was 11 hours of combined exposure, over 11. So 8 hours a day on average. And so you just think through, okay, I'm trying to mold and shape this teenager. Meanwhile, there are other voices coming into them. 8 hours a day. This is not counting teachers. This is not counting school. This is not counting good reading, like doing homework and stuff. This is outside of that. So they have these other voices coming them and teaching them and explaining the culture to them for 8 hours a day. And I'm trying to grab this kid's heart. Well, that's not going to work very well. And even though, you know, I don't believe like all music is bad or something like that, but at best, most of that is going to be neutral. And at worst, it's giving them a picture of society. It's giving them a picture of sexuality. It's giving them a picture of relationships. It's giving them a feel of maybe anger towards the world. Or it's, you know, they're going through magazines. It's giving them a picture of how they should dress. And they're getting 8 hours of this input every day, day after day after day after day. And now this kid's troubled, and you're trying to grab their heart. What do you do? So I would take all of it away. I would say, okay, no more books unless I approve them, no more magazines, no more music, no more TV, no more anything unless I approve. That's drastic, but it's a drastic situation. I care enough about my kids that I'd be willing to do anything to get their hearts. Free time, I'd take it away. I mean, just to be honest, why do they need free time? If they need time to exercise, great, I'll schedule that for them. If they need time to relax and read, great, I'll give them time to read, and I'll tell them what to read. You know, they need structure, not free time. Clothing. If I have a troubled teen, they are not going to dress all in black, and they're not going to paint the room black, and they're not going to have black eyeshadow and black shoes, and that's just one example. They're not going to dress promiscuous. These things are things that they use to try to control their environment and try to control how people perceive them. And they think that these are ways that they can kind of fit in with the crowd that they want to fit in with. So maybe you could make them fit in a little less with the crowd that they want to fit in with. And I'm not saying you have to dress them, you know, like complete geeks or something. They're going to view it that way. You know, you just go to the store with them. You pick out things that you think are reasonable. If those things are at the store, that means they're somewhat in fashion. It's not something from, you know, 50 years ago. And you pick out stuff that's reasonable, and you say, here are the 5 things you're going to wear, and I'm throwing everything else away, or giving it to Goodwill or whatever. Hair. What limits do you want to have? Can boys have long hair? Can girls shave their head? Can they go bald? Is it okay if they have purple hair? You know, as a parent, I would restrict this stuff. So, you know, I'm going to have standards on you. Jewelry, not that jewelry's like from Satan or something, but, you know, if my troubled teen wanted to have little earrings and she had been behaving fairly well recently, sure, that's fine. If she acted up and I'd taken away everything else from her, I might take away those too. I don't know. But if she's acting up and she has 28 body piercings, you know, like, no. You know, you don't need to wear a nose ring or an eyelash ring or a belly button ring or whatever else they have. You know, I'm going to set you down a path of kind of conservatism and normalism and try to get you to fit into society, not be on this extreme end. Tattoos, obviously, if they have a tattoo, there's not much you can do about that, but I wouldn't let them get any more. Privacy, this is probably offensive to some people, but there are, how do I word it? I guess just when it comes to privacy, privacy is a privilege. I mean, obviously they can go to the bathroom in private, but you know, if they're slamming the door or they're locking themselves in the room and brooding all night long, then I would take their door off. If they're in my home, then everything they do comes under my authority. I wouldn't think twice about searching through their desk or their dresser, and they would know that. I wouldn't let them have their own little private journal. Why? Because what troubled teens do is they get their own little journal and they just fill it full of poison. Why do they need to do that? Is that really healthy? Like, no. I mean, if you want to have a journal, that's fine, but it's open to me. Computer, I mentioned like Facebook or social networking and stuff. If you let them on the computer, you need another password. You just set that up as, hey, things are kind of rough in our family right now. I feel like I've lost your respect, and I'm not going to give you a lot of freedom right now, and I'm going to start letting you use Facebook again, but I want to know your password. I want to be able to see everything. So anything like that, privacy is something that they have lost the right to. Just being served, you know, as a parent, you serve your kids all the time. If they're giving you a nightmare, they don't deserve that. They don't have that coming to them. They are not owed that. And so it's totally within your rights to say, hey, you know, I just noticed the last five times I've cooked a meal, you keep complaining about it. Sorry, you're on your own now. You know, you can find stuff in the fridge, you can cook your own meal, but I'm not your slave. And when you start treating me right, then we'll talk again. And so you just hold them to a standard on that. Same thing with doing their laundry or letting them use the car or driving them around. You know, they can do their own laundry. They can take a bike. Makeup, again, I wouldn't take this away unless, again, it was one of the last things to take away. But on the other hand, I wouldn't let them do extreme things. I wouldn't let them do the black eyeshadow or do things that draw attention to themselves or make them look a lot weirder than the kind of the normal place that society's in. Spending, just because they make money doesn't mean they can buy whatever they want, would be my thought. So if anything's going to come into my house, it's going to meet my approval, and that goes for books or magazines or clothing or whatever. So those are things I would restrict. And then kind of with rescue, part of that goes with redirecting. So you're not just taking away, but some of those things you take away, you're replacing. So just real quickly, obviously positive influences. So like we talk about books and magazines and movies and stuff like that. Well, any good stuff, pour it on. You know, if you want to sit down with them and watch a good movie or one that has a moral and watch the movie with them and then explain the moral to them afterwards, that's great. If you have a series of books that you think would help them, then get that. Invest in some good books, good DVDs or whatever. Time with quality friends, that could be great. Again, I wouldn't let my kids who are troubled, I wouldn't give them a whole lot of freedom. Yeah, run over to Johnny's house and play. But if I knew that they had some really good quality friends, I might try to increase their time with them. Their time serving others. Just you know, serving at church or serving in the community, basically going from a I'm being served mentality to a I'm here to help other people. And so that would be a good thing. Time with healthy families. I know that that girl that stayed with us for a month, I think one of the things that was a breaking point for her that was really helpful was just being around our kids and the kids loving on her and writing her notes, and that really had a positive impact on her heart. Academics. I would just try to fill up their life. Typically, a rebellious teen isn't doing great in school. That's not always the case, but boy, you could sure pour a lot more time into studying and pursuing academics or music or things that would be worthwhile. Chores, I would pour those on, have them do chores, have them do them well. I would expect a respectful attitude. So as far as something new that I'm asking of them, I'm asking them to respond to me politely, basically to come under my authority, which is what they're having a problem with. And then attention to detail. The things that I ask them to do, I want them to do well. I want them to do perfectly. And so if they're folding laundry, they don't just take it and crumple it up and throw it off to the side or just do a half of a job on it. You know, they need to do everything they do and do it seriously. Okay, then encourage. So this is basically our love, but I needed an E word. So they've got to know that you love them and that you're for them. If you, or if your kid knows that you're for them, you can do this. If they don't know you're for them, they're going to hate your guts. So if you think of like a coach, you know, this picture, this coach hugging this player, I don't know, it could even be father and son or something, but it could be that 20 minutes ago, he could have been screaming right in that kid's face, 3 inches away from him, and letting him know how stupid it was that he didn't make a play. And you know what? That kid's fine with that. Because he knows the coach is for him. He knows the coach loves him. And so he can take a lot of negative input. And so the key to working with kids is not just, okay, be really disciplined. You can't just do that. You have to pour on the love too. You have to let them know that you're for them and that you care about them. If they don't think you're for them, they will never respond to the changes that you bring into your home. Show your love. We've talked about this a little bit in some of the other sessions, but you know, just practically hugging them, touching them, telling them you love them, writing them a note, explaining the situation to them, talking through it. Again, this is probably not a great picture, but it's hard to capture some of this on pictures. This is a troubled teen. You know, this isn't this kid here. And the troubled teen, you go up and you hug them, and they hate your guts. Doesn't matter. Hug them anyway. You know, hug them even if they say that it really drives them crazy and it makes them hate you even worse. You know, you do your part. You show your love. Do everything you can to tell them and to show them that you love them. Stay in bounds. Just meaning don't yell unnecessarily. I can be pretty strong with my kids sometimes. And I think there's a level that's appropriate and there's a level that's not. There's no need to cuss. There's no need to call them names. Things like that. You know, you keep it clean. You can be strong without going to those extremes. And they'll have more respect for you for that. Obviously, you need to explain yourself, explain what you're doing. You know, you say, hey, buddy, here's the deal. I really care about you, and here's my options. You know what? I can just let you go. And then I hope that you'll like me again in 5 years. I could do that. But you know what? I'm really afraid that you're really going to mess up your life, and I care about you too much to let that happen. And so you just explain what's going through your head, and they're going to still be looking at you with the evil eye and like they want to kill you, but you keep doing the right things anyway, hoping that some of that kind of sinks in. For me, this is something I'll share with somebody in counseling sometimes. Basically, a kid's going down a road, and there's a fork in the road, and as a parent, maybe you know on this right side here that this is the road to destruction, that this is the road that's really going to mess up their life. And you know that on this road is the nice family, the white picket fence, the dog, and the wife, and the three kids. Okay? So, as a parent, what am I going to do? Well, and even a kid can think through this. Even my students in school, eighth graders, could figure this out. You know, well, I want to make this road look as unpleasant as possible. I'm going to put up warning signs. I'm going to put barriers across there. I'm going to make this road just miserable to go down. And I'm going to make this road as attractive as possible to do everything I can to get them to go down that. So I would sit down and explain that to the kids, you know, and say, you know, hey, buddy, I know you hate what's going on right now. This is what I'm doing. I want you to go down this path. I can't force you to go down this path. If you want to go over the barbed wire, if you want to crash through the barrier, you want to go down this path of destruction, you know what? I really can't stop you. But I'm sure going to try. And you let them know that you care enough to do that. Supervise. Just practically, keep them with you. Watch them like an eagle. Keep them close. Watch them all the time. No blind trust where trust has been violated. So, basically, what I would suggest here is spy on them. If they say they're going to the movie with your friends and you're starting to let up and you're starting to let them get out and do a little bit of stuff, you make sure that they went to that movie. You drive to that movie if you have to. You check on your car. You call them. Get a cell phone that has a GPS application on it, or something like that. You know, you find out where they're at. You can get a little GPS thing. I think it's about $100. You stick it on the car, and it records everywhere the car goes and how fast it went between places. And, you know, there are ways that you can spy on your kids. I think this is like $100, too. There's like a little thing you can stick in the phone that finds all the deleted text messages. I mean, do whatever you can. You have got to check up on this kid. I'm not saying I wouldn't do this with kids that aren't troubled. But if you start to suspect that they're lying to you, you start to see their behavior going down, or their behavior has obviously gone down that path, then by all means, do not just let them have their own way. Keep an eye on them. Drug testing. You can pick up a drug test at Walgreens for between $17 to $60. So if your kids have a problem with drugs, just, you know, however long they test for, every whatever it is, couple months or something, test them at home. Why not? If it's that extreme of a situation, if it's that important to you to make sure that they're not on drugs, then check it. Make sure. Correct. You know, we're not going to go into this real thoroughly because with a teenager, we really don't use much physical discipline or corporal punishment type of things. And so a lot of what you're left to is strong words, strong talk, and taking away privileges. And so a lot of this relates to, hey, sweetie, you have 5 minutes to take a shower. They took 5.5 minutes, and you shut off the water, or you shut off the hot water. You know, but basically, you're just saying, I'm going to enforce these rules. I'm going to find a way to do this. You only have one privilege left, and that's to be able to wear your favorite shirt, and so now I'm taking that away from you, or I'm taking away your hairbrush, or whatever it is. Whatever it is that is a point of conflict, you do everything you can. So you're left a little bit to grounding and taking away privileges with a teenager. And so you just go through that list. Basically, anything they like is something that you can take away from them. Anything that's important to them. And then this is really key. Unyieldingly hold to this plan. So, when I've talked to parents about this before, I've talked to parents, I've been like, yeah, I don't know if you can do this, you know, because you really need to be tough. And, you know, you try to explain it to them and stuff. And they kind of gear up for, yeah, I think I can do it. And I get it. I think I understand. And they do it. And they hold to it for about a week. And then, you know, the next thing I hear is, you know, oh, this kid's at this party, or this kid's, I saw this kid at the mall, or I saw this kid driving down the street. And it's like, what happened? And so what happens is the parents put on all these standards and say, okay, this is the new game plan, and the kid responds to it, and they change. And the kids, the parents haven't seen this before, and they get all excited. Like, oh, they're doing really good. Well, I hate to be so restrictive when they're doing so well. So here, and they pour back on all these privileges again. And then 3 weeks later, all of a sudden they're in the same spot. How did they get there? Well, this is a major shift in their family. You can't just do this for 5 days. This is a lifestyle change. You're doing this for years. This is a new way of living for your family. Now, I'm not saying that you never get back any of those privileges, but there's a major shift that probably doesn't change very much, maybe ever, until the kid moves out. And so you've got to hold to this plan. You need to be willing to be the bad guy in their eyes. So you're on this plan, and they say they hate your guts, which they did before anyway, right? They're a rebellious teen. But now they're saying it all the time. They really hate your guts. That's okay. I'm willing to have you hate my guts because I want to save your life so bad. And so you take the plan, and you stick to it. And then I think also just being rebellious implies that they have a struggle with authority, with your authority. And so going down the rescue plan, you're saying, you know what, I'm the authority here, and I'm going to plant my flag, and I'm not going to give way. If you want to give me a hard time, I'm up for it. If you want to go head-to-head, bring it on, baby. And that's the attitude you've got to have. I will do anything to rescue you. And then lastly, to evaluate extremes. Some extreme ideas. I mentioned moving. Your kids having all kinds of problems with, being in the wrong crowd. Sometimes it can even get dangerous, where a kid's been in the wrong crowd and they owe somebody money, or they stole somebody's drugs, or it gets pretty crazy. And maybe the best thing is to move. Well, I'm out of here. And you just take your family and off you go. Rip them out of school. Just say, well, we're going to homeschool now. Pull them home. Home away from their friends. Get into a spot where you're watching them. And that's extreme, but you might need to do that. And then this picture is of a Volkswagen Beetle that somebody took and restored it into that. And just, I guess, having that mindset in your home of you might have to change everything in your home. And again, it's not just that you're changing the kid. In some ways, that might be the easy part. But to change your home and the flavor of your home is really going to take some major change on your part. So just for example, in your home, let's say you watch movies all the time. And that's just kind of the fun family thing you do. And maybe 4 times a week you watch a movie as a family. And then you have this troubled teen and you realize, you know what, a lot of these movies that we watch are not appropriate, and we're going to cut out movies, or we're going to just watch kiddie movies or something. And everything changes. It's a sacrifice for everybody. And so parents will kind of get to that, it's like, well, yeah, I hate to do, you know, it's like they're just kind of unwilling. And sometimes parents, we've talked about the rescue plan, and they get it, and they understand, and they're like, we would have to change everything we do. Like, so? Your point is, you're not willing to do that? And that's what it comes down to, is if it takes extremes, then do the extremes. If you got to move, move. Got to homeschool. You know, just whatever it takes, do those things. So those are just some of the things that I've learned over time or experienced. Does anybody have any questions on any of that? All right, let's call it a night. Thanks, guys.